Agricultural consultants throughout the UK are members of the CAAV, the Central Association of Agricultural Valuers. So who better to talk to about future income streams than their policy and technical advisor? We're here today on the Cranbourne Chase on a dry day, which is unusual at the moment, and it's really nice to see some tractors working in the fields. We're here to meet Kate Russell.
Hello, Ian. I am a policy and technical advisor with the CAAV. I'm a land agent by training. I'm actually a fourth generation agricultural valuer, come from a long line of livestock auctioneers. And before I started this job, I worked in private practice all over the country. And now I'm here in North Dorset, married to an arable farm manager and doing technical and policy advice for the CAAV.
We're here to talk about identifying different income streams. Obviously, for farmers at the moment, we don't know which way to go. How do you find other ways of making money when really with Brexit, there is so much uncertainty around?
And that's a really huge issue, isn't it, at the moment? And I think a lot of farmers haven't really started to get to grips with this. So it's great to have this conversation. And I think actually a lot of it comes down to things that we all know that businesses should be doing anyway. But perhaps Brexit gives us the excuse to have those conversations that we might have just been putting off because we're all a bit too busy doing the day job. So I think there are probably sort of 8 steps that I'm going to go through of things that I think businesses can do to help themselves prepare. And, I think sometimes it's helpful to plan and have a go at something and be thinking about these things, even if the end results are going to be a bit uncertain at this stage. You don't necessarily have to know where you're going to end up in order to get started on the journey.
We're thinking about starting on the journey of looking for other income streams. So I'm looking out of the window on my farm, feeling pretty despondent at the moment. I might be looking at the buildings, the land, what's going on around me. What should I be thinking?
Well, I think the starting point for anyone, Ian, has really got to be reviewing where you are now. Okay, so how is your business performing? What have you actually got in those physical assets? You mentioned buildings. What else is there? Have you got woodland? Have you got interesting watercourses? Have you got pretty landscapes? Have you got a population on your doorstep that wants to buy produce? And then what about you and your family? What are your personal skills? What are your strengths and weaknesses? Are there people in your family that might actually want to go and do something different that can bring other income onto the farm? And then we can't overlook the all important financial assets. What are your assets and liabilities financially? So a starting point has really got to be, where are we now? Sit down with a piece of paper and summarise all of that.
How do we take that forward?
Well, I think probably the next step in the chain is to think about your cash flow. Where's the money coming from? Where's it going to? We're all very conscious that BPS payments are going to go. So that's an income stream that's going to disappear over time. How is that going to be replaced? Now, when does it come in at the moment? What does it pay for? And how are you going to find a way to replace that? What other money have you got coming in? Have you already got environmental stewardship schemes bringing money in? Other diversification? Where else does the money come into the business? So it's really important to do that properly. And then you might just want a little bit of advice on that from your bank manager, your accountant, to help you sort of see the pathway of how that money is flowing in the business.
Okay, and in terms of BPS, we never really know when that's coming in anyway, do we?
No, it's always later than we'd like, isn't it? Well, I think then we need to look at the land. And I think more important than ever, once BPS goes, which pays you for every hectare that you farm, we've got to then start thinking about what are those hectares earning? So what is your land that earns you the most money and what land is not earning you money? Can you give up the marginal land? Or actually, with a business like sheep farming, could you make use of someone else's marginal land that isn't as profitable for them in another business? So it's all about looking at the margin, what does that land generate you? And then thinking also about rented property, really crucial. Can you afford to carry on renting in? Do you actually need to think about renting land out? Is it time to have a rent review? All of those aspects need careful consideration. Then I'm going to say, look over the fence and have a think about your neighbours. Traditionally, we might say that British farmers haven't been terribly good at working together, but I think that's really changed recently. And I think we need to think about, can we work cooperatively? So are there things that you could do better if you're working with a neighbour? That might be sharing silaging equipment, simple as that. Or it might be you running your sheep on their arable farm to get fertility back in the soil. That's what we're doing here in Cranbourne Chase. They're looking at bringing in overwintered sheep on stubble turnips, putting fertility back into a pretty poor, chalky soil. And that's something that this estate is looking to take forward and do more of. So there are opportunities out there, potentially, about working with people who've not been involved in the sheep sector before. And then, you know, are there things like cooperative marketing that you could look at? How can you sell better, making more margin on that product?
I think historically, you said, as you just said, farmers haven't been very good at working together. As soon as there's a chance of an extra little margin somewhere, they go away from these groups. How can you encourage people to stick together to give them strength?
I think that's a real challenge, isn't it? And ultimately, it's going to come down to the personalities involved. But you need the commitment to the bigger picture, and people need to understand where the bigger picture is and how it can benefit them. And perhaps it's about thinking about smoothing out those peaks and troughs and helping with the cash flow over time, that actually overall you end up with, you know, a smoother cash flow and therefore less drama in the finances. Here's where I introduce that much trotted out phrase, public money for public goods. Now, an awful lot of farmers have been doing this already. And farmers have been extremely good all the way back from the first countryside stewardship and environmentally sensitive area schemes in getting hold of environmental grant schemes and making them work for their farms. The new environmental grant schemes, we don't know all the detail yet, but there will be opportunities there for people to think about. And if you've not been involved in them before, you're really going to have to start scratching your head and thinking about whether you should get involved. There might also be other opportunities, though, outside of purely the grant sector, of thinking about payment for ecosystem services. So there are water companies, for example, already working with farmers to change land management in order to make the water cleaner and needing less treatment at the water treatment plants, and being prepared to pay contracts for that. There are schemes in the uplands to help peat restoration. There are opportunities there for farmers to move from being price takers, as in a grant scheme situation, to being price makers and saying, I have this asset, or I can offer you this service, and this is the price I'm going to set on it. So that would require quite a mindset change, and it's something we're doing quite a lot of work on in the CAV, looking at the valuation implications of that.
That's really fascinating. And would that link in with something like carbon sequestration? How would that work? Have you looked at that?
Well, carbon sequestration is a challenging one, but certainly there are opportunities there, and we're back to peat again with that, but also trees. I'm sure there are sheep farmers in the uplands that see trees as a bit of a threat rather than an asset, but, you know, if you can find the opportunity to enter into a contract with someone who wants to pay you to change the use of your land, because by doing so it will result in less flooding in the town downstream, there could be market opportunities there that don't necessarily have to stop you doing what you're doing, just give you a different income stream. You might make more money keeping fewer sheep, and that will be a challenge for some people. So next, we're going to come and talk about the sort of traditional diversification, if you like. How do we bring new income streams onto the farm? So this is looking at those other assets that we touched on before. First of all, are you an owner-occupier or a tenant? If you're a tenant farmer, obviously the opportunities are more limited. You'll need to get landlord's consent before you can do anything to the buildings or change the use of the land. But if you're an owner-occupier, also you've then got the opportunity to talk about getting loans secured against the property to raise finance for diversification. So there are definitely perhaps a bit more flexibility if you're an owner-occupier. So buildings, are there any suitable for conversion? The planning regime at the moment is as favourable as it's ever been. Permitted development for changes to residential use. Have you got demand in your area for workshops, for rural offices, or even just storage? Even caravan and boat storage, people will pay money for. What about the land? Recreation? You know, the public is out there with more time on its hands than ever and more money to spend. What about mountain bike trails? What about camping or bushcraft? Can you run events? Would you give horse riders the opportunity to pay for access to your land? Educational visits are something that a lot of people are doing, bringing public onto the farm. But you must do your research. Is there demand for it? You need to think carefully about costs and how you're going to fund it. Will you get planning? It's almost certainly going to be needed. Don't forget that one of your costs could be business rates. Everything is rateable. And then, have you got the skills?
I think that's a really good
point, the skills, because, okay, you can convert a barn and have the general public on the farm, but some people, and quite a lot of farmers, don't want the general public on the farm and they don't like dealing with the general public.
Absolutely. And if that's your starting point, then don't even waste your time going there. You've got to want to do this. And that sort of brings me on to the next point, really, because if you don't have the appetite for it, you're just not going to make it work, because it'll never be a success if you're not going to put your heart and soul into it. Diversification takes hard work, it takes time and money. And if you're not the right person, think about who might be. Is there someone else in the family that actually could do this and would like the opportunity to set up their own business? Not relying on farm income, being able to bring income into the business instead. The whole farm is going to change if you venture down this route. So are you ready for that? And is the family supporting you? Is the rest of the business behind you on this? Also, it's often said, you know, diversification can make people take their eye off the ball. Don't forget the core business.
That is a very good point. Yes, and there's so many balls to juggle now with all these options that you've just discussed. It's quite a change in mindset, and also very difficult to keep up with mentally for a farmer, you know, to juggle all these balls when
exactly.
They're used to dealing with just their sheep.
Exactly, yeah. I mean, you know, quite apart from all the regulation that we're faced with now and the paperwork, people have understood they need to have different skills than they used to in the past. And that's where, if I can put a little plug in here for the advisor, this is where advisors can really help a farming business. So if you haven't got those skills in-house and in the family, there are people that can help you. And yes, okay, you have to pay for that advice, but it can really free you up to do what you're good at, whether that's rearing the best quality sheep or whether that's running a fantastic campsite or whatever else it may be. But, you know, don't overlook the advisors. They can really help you through this period. So the last one, Ian, is probably the trickiest of all, because I think you can't overlook the fact that some people will have to think the unthinkable. This represents an opportunity to review the whole business. And if your conclusion when you've reviewed the whole business is, we're really struggling and we can't see how to go forwards, then it may well be that you've got to think about whether this is the time to do something different. Is it time to think about coming out of farming? Should you let your land out to someone that can actually run it more profitably than you can and take a rent instead, a nice secure rent check? Do you want to go into some joint venture and let a younger, fitter, keener person do the hard work for you? Always a challenge there with more than one person taking money out of the business, mind you, so you've got to be a bit careful. Or do you actually look at land values these days and say, now's a good time to cash in and retire or do something different? So it's a very difficult subject and one that people want to avoid, but we need to face up to these difficult decisions, have these hard conversations. And again, sometimes it might help to have someone from outside the family come in and initiate that conversation with you.
So what would be your takeaway messages from what we've been discussing today for farmers? How would you summarise it?
Well, I think be brave, sit down and have those conversations within the business, talk to the other people involved in the business and figure out your plan. You've got to make a start on that plan, even if you don't know where that plan's going to lead you to. But just by thinking about these things, you may well come to the conclusion, actually, what we're doing is good, it's sustainable, financially, environmentally, socially, sustainable. We can carry on doing what we're doing, and that's fine. But you will make that decision from a position of knowledge and understanding and not just stabbing in the dark.
What's your vision for the sheep sector in the future?
Well, I think we have a fantastic sheep sector in the UK, and what I want to see, I'm sure what everybody wants to see, is a thriving and diverse and sustainable sheep sector where premium meat and wool production can exist alongside all these diversified businesses and giving opportunities for our really fantastic native breeds to thrive as well, because those are a great cultural resource for the country and it would be great to see them go from strength to strength.
What I'm wondering about with the sheep sector at the moment, obviously, you know, if we don't have the markets for them, it could take a big hit, couldn't it? So,
absolutely. I think everybody's extremely concerned about the tariffs position and where our markets will be in future. And there's an awful lot to do to sell the positive benefits of lamb and mutton at home. It's perceived as an expensive meat, and I think we need to remind people what a fantastic, sustainable meat it is, especially in these, we're under the pressure that we're under from vegans and the push for eating less meat. But if you compare what goes into a lamb with what goes into a commercially reared chicken, I'd rather have the lamb any day.